Welcome to Red Sox Digest, the only show where pain, sarcasm, and a dash of hope collide nightly like a Trevor Story strikeout. We cover every loss, every meltdown, and yes, even the rare win with brutally honest takes and zero front office fluff. Subscribe today at RedSoxDigest.com or risk being left out in the cold like a home game in April. And now, here's the crew at Red Sox Digest.
Good evening, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Red Sox Digest Live. I'm your host, Jim Delfino, and tonight we're teetering on the edge of mediocrity. Your Boston Red Sox are a combined 46-45 now on the season, thanks to a three-game sweep against the Washington Nationals. Joining me tonight is Nick Face, a person who is from the Boston area, who still believes that Duncan runs on Red Sox wins, and Curry Mitchell, fresh from Texas, where they call a 90-mile-an-hour fastball just a warm-up. We got Trevor Story sending moonshots into the orbit, a bullpen that treats a closer like a choose-your-own-adventure, and managerial decisions so baffling they would stump Siri. So grab your caffeine. Nick, that's a nice latte for you. Curry, some sweet tea. Strap it in, and let's dissect this glorious clown car we call Red Sox baseball. How are you, gentlemen?
I'm feeling good. They took care of what should have been done. They won three games. They swept the Nationals and fired their general manager and manager. How about that? Congratulations, Red Sox. You swept a team that stinks. Good job.
What are your initial reactions?
You know, it's nice to come on here with an actual win. So far, I was 0-2. It's not a good feeling. But today, I'm happy. I told y'all last week, you got to take care of business against the Reds and the Nats going into the Rockies series. And 5 out of 6, I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about this quite a bit, this 9-game stretch with the Reds, the Nationals, and coming up soon to a theater near you, the Colorado Rockies at home, where we really needed to do some damage. 6-3 was probably the worst-case scenario. We needed to be more like 7-2 or 8-1. I want to start off tonight talking about Sadan Rafaela. He went 3-for-4 with a bomb. But is this a breakout or just a blip? So he had himself pretty good a day, 3-for-4 with a 406-foot solo home run, I believe in the ninth, that left the bat at 109.7 miles an hour. It was his 11th home run of the season, and he now has a slash line of 264, 305, 458, and an OPS that's climbing now at 763. Over his last five games, he's hitting 316, five doubles, two homers, four RBIs, and a walk. We know the glove has always been elite, but the bat is finally starting to catch up. That said, his walk rate is still low. It's under 5%, and he's chasing like he's trying to swat flies in a hurricane. So he's producing, but are we buying it? My question to you guys is, are we finally seeing the Rafaela settle into a consistent offensive role? And if so, is he a long-term piece for this lineup, or is this just a hot streak against the Nationals team who stranded 15 runners and just fired their manager and GM? Nick Face, you first.
I'm warming up to Rafaela being a mainstay here in this lineup, and it's not just about the National series. It's been over the past month. He's been hitting over 300. His numbers have been climbing ever since. It was kind of a tough start for him. I like the kid. I was very happy last season when they signed him to the contract. I thought it was a nice addition to their team. You know, sign him now, get him ready to go. I think the biggest question mark we've all tried our best to figure out is the long swing and adjustments being made. I'm very pleased with the adjustments that have been made. I don't want to see him go higher than 8 in a lineup, though. I don't. I like him where he is, 8 or 9. And let's be real, he's been one of the most consistent players for the past month for the Red Sox that they can count on. And that home run today was pretty crucial. That gave them a little bit more insurance tonight to get that sweep and get a nice victory against the Nationals. It was a nail-biter today. That was not a very comfortable win whatsoever.
No, not at all. Curry, your reaction to Sadan Rafaela, what are you seeing? What are your hopes? What do you think?
Well, I was looking up. You said the last five. I'm going back the last 25 games. He's come to bat 87 times. He has 27, 10 doubles, He's come across to score 15 of those times. This trend upwards has been happening over the last over month. So he's been ticking better. Yes, he's striking out still, but this is what, only his second full year in the league? He's on a team-friendly deal, which, you know, I think he has 5 more years or 6 more years left. Mike Campbell on a team-friendly deal. That opens up the pocketbooks if they actually choose to spend it. His defense is always elite. He very rarely makes mistakes, which on a team that's second in the major leagues in errors, you definitely need that. And somebody said in our chat that I was thinking move him up as Connor Wong, but – so they're like, why? It's working. It makes sense. He's batting ninth. He's, you know, knocking the brick. I mean, he's doing everything right now. I don't know how long it's going to last. But hopefully this is the Rafaela that we get to know and love for the future. And not just something that's, oh, here, flashes 20 games in the rest of the season. He can't hit a beach ball.
Yeah, he made some really good points there. You know, one of the things about Rafaela was when we had Jackie Bradley Jr. on this team, Bradley was a defensive first type of outfielder. And you always kind of felt like whatever he gave you offensively was just, you know, icing on the cake. You didn't expect much. I mean, granted, he had some pretty elite home runs for us, especially in the playoffs, but you really didn't expect much out of him. You just kind of hoped that he wouldn't strike out, hopefully put the ball in play, maybe move some runners over. When Rafaela first came up, you know, his defense was extremely elite. He obviously had to play center field and shortstop and some second base last season because of the Story injury. And one of the things that I said on some different podcasts and some Twitter spaces, when people were actually kind of down on him because of his offense, I kind of said, you know what, I'm going to give this kid a pass for his first year because he is a rookie. And at the same time, he's got to learn major league tendencies of batters in center field. Do I need to shade to the right, to the left? And then also do that with shortstop. You know, how are players going to hit? Do I have to cover second? Are you covering second? And things like that. So there was a lot on him defensively. And I figured that whatever he gave us on an offensive standpoint would be better than nothing at all. Fast forward to earlier this season. We kind of saw a little bit of the same, but we did see that defense get a little tighter. Some of those rookie errors were not there. He's made some amazing catches in center field and has definitely saved a lot of runs. I don't know what his defensive runs saved are, but it's got to be up there, probably in the top 10 in the league in center field easily. The other thing about that is that he quietly, over the last couple months, the bat has started to come alive a lot more. And to my other point with Jackie, a lot stronger, I think, than what Jackie was doing in terms of consistency. And I think it's kind of at that point now, when you look at Rafaela, I think he needs to maybe even be thought about bringing up in the lineup a little bit. I mean, today, I was kind of surprised he was still batting ninth, but what do you guys think about moving him up in the lineup? Do you think he's fine right where he is, or do you think he deserves to be moved up a little bit?
I want to keep him where he is, Jim. I want to do this because I need more consistency. I worry, and I compare a lot with Jackie Bradley Jr. I do, because you see the elite glove and the streaky bat. If we can jump through that hurdle and adapt and get more production from Rafaela over a longer period of time, sure, I'll slot him up to 7. But I think anytime we're trying to raise the bar here for some of our players, I'm very concerned on the mental standpoint of a player if they get slotted into the two hole or the leadoff hole or cleanup. It's going to go downhill, and we need more production to sustain what they're doing right now. And I like Rafaela where he is.
Curry, your reaction to my points on Rafaela, do you think he deserves to be brought up in the lineup, or are you happy keeping him right where he is?
I'm happy keeping him right where he is because it's not like he's the only one hitting. Everybody's starting to, you know, from the top of the lineup to the bottom of the lineup. You know, if he's comfortable at the ninth spot, you don't need to move him, then don't move him. And to answer your question, he has 12 defensive runs saved, which is number 8 in the major leagues behind, you know, Wells, Kwan, Armstrong, Turner, and Olsen, and Straw, and Rodriguez. So he's up there in the top 10 on defensive runs saved in the major league right now. And, I mean, if with him coming alive in the bat, like I said, I made a joke earlier today, Connor shouldn't be batting 8th. But also, he's in there once every 4 days. Rafael is killing it at the 9th spot. There was a brief time earlier in the year that, and then you saw him to make a downward trend, and then went back to the 9th spot, and then now he's going right back up. So clearly, it's working for him. Just keep from there. Don't mess anything up right now. Your bats are coming alive. Y'all couldn't score anything in the first inning, and y'all were lining up a basket of balls in the first inning, and that's the complete opposite. No one can score on you, and you are tearing cover off balls right now. So I don't stop broke.
Yeah, a couple good points by both of you. I'm in your same camp. I'd like to keep Rafaela at the 9 hole, not just for his comfortability, but my point is that if you've got a guy that's putting out above average offense at the 9 hole, then theoretically your team should be pretty good offensively 1 through 9. Now, it's kind of like Bill Miller winning a batting title in 03, right? Batting 9th. I mean, you know, if you can't find a spot for him higher in the lineup, that means your lineup must be pretty damn good. And thanks for looking that up, Curry. Yeah, I figured he had to be in that top 10 defensive run save. So he's been a very good performer in 2025 for us, and very happy with what we see. Next thing I want to talk about, Garrett Crochet. So Crochet picked up his 9th win today. He now leads the MLB with 151 strikeouts. He went 5 innings. He gave up 2 runs, struck out 7. He is now the 4th pitcher in Red Sox history to hit 150 strikeouts before the All-Star break, joining Clemens, Pedro, and Chris Sale. But here's the red flag, guys. He's already at 120 innings pitched on the season in really what's considered his first full season as a starter. And the Sox are kind of treading a needle here, trying to win now without blowing out their best arm. My question for you guys, is it time to start managing his innings more carefully, or you do ride this hot hand and risk the crash later? And if he's your game one guy in October, how do you keep him fresh without punting games in July? Curry, let's start with you.
I mean, today you look at his start. He went 5 innings, had 9 hits, and gave up 2 runs. That's a bad start for Greg Crochet. If that's a bad start for him, give it to me every day of the week. And when it comes to managing him, I think that's the biggest thing with him is he's young. He's just had, Tommy John a couple of years ago. So still has some growth to go. Early in the season, he had to be your war horse. You didn't have anybody who could help him. You know, you had Buehler struggling, Giolito struggling. Hill wasn't back yet. Tanner Houck was, you know, doing terrible. So you had to lean on him. But now you got Giolito coming around. Bayo's coming around. Houck in his rehab start, he looked really good again. Granted, it was against a 1A, I think, or a 2A. But he was he was not missing the strike zone on basic pitches. I mean, it's a good time now after the All-Star. These pitchers starting to fall into place. You don't need him going 7-8 innings every night. You could see this rain delay kind of threw off some stuff today. I mean, just quick stat. Giolito, his last 5 games, 3-0 with a .83 ERA, 30 strikeouts, 20 hits. You got a number 2 now. Who is clearly helping. So ride those hands while you can. Give Giolito a chance to keep making the push. Let they have a couple games in a row where he's only going 5, maybe 6. Keep his pitches limited. Kind of rest a little bit because you don't need to, you know, constantly send him out there. because you've got them again.
Yeah, some great points. Nick, your reaction to the Crochet question. What do you think the Red Sox should do? You know, continue to run him out there, watch his innings. Where do you stand?
I was already concerned last week with the start that he put up. I already was looking at location and mechanics being off and needing to tinker. I mean, this was not a pretty start, and he got very lucky by... I was a little nervous. I think it was the second inning when the bases were loaded, right after that rain delay, and James Wood struck out. I mean, one pitch, that could have been a tie game. I like how he dug down deep to figure it out, but there is something that is not right right now with Crochet. I mean, well, lucky this was the Nationals. We're very lucky, because this could have completely went another way if you played the Blue Jays or another more star-studded team. I think right now you're looking at a guy who's laboring, and it's laboring because we're already at the 120 innings pitched here. I'm nervous on managing Crochet through the second half. I'm going to admit that right now. I am nervous about it because here's a guy that's never done it. And the Red Sox do not have a philosophy right now on how to get the best out of guys on this stage. The good thing here on Crochet is he is a bulldog. He is not Chris Sale as a toothpick. He is not. He is much more, I would say, big-boned, as politely as I need to say it. And I think that that athleticism and bulldog style from him can push him over the top to be over 200 innings. I do think there's going to need to be some adjustments with the rotation after the All-Star break, just to manage him a little bit. Today, I don't think Cora wanted to throw him. I think he was at, what, 90, 95 pitches, 96 pitches that he threw over five innings? You don't want that. I think Cora was probably hoping it was going to be about 80 and then give the game to, you know, our bullpen. The reason Crochet's pitch count and innings cap is already exceeding the level it should be right now, again, is, remember, it's our bullpen. It's just an absolute joke for the most part right now after Chapman. I mean, I was biting my nails today getting through Jordan Hicks trying to close this game today. And I can't stand the fact, and we'll probably get into this a little bit later, I do not want Aroldis Chapman traded. I'm going to put it on record right now unless I am blown out of the water with a move. I want this rumor to stop. I want people to focus on the win now mentality and figure out what that next piece is going to be.
Yeah, totally. I'm in agreement with both of you as it relates to Crochet. You know, obviously, you want to be able to know that you can have at least one guy go out there each and every five games through one turn of the rotation and be able to go six, seven, eight innings, save your bullpen so that Cora can kind of manage accordingly, you know, on the back end with your four and five starter so that, you know, if they can't get through five innings or so and you have to mix and match, you know that you got your bulldog going the next night. The issue and the elephant in the room here, to your guy's point, is the fact that this is his first full season, his first full season that he will really go over his innings, and he's never been in this area before in terms of amount of innings pitched. And you know, you are going to have to worry a little bit about how he's responding since he's coming back from that surgery. I mean, let's not mistake, he's looked very, very good, but his last two outings, I mean, I put it on Twitter and some people kind of razzed me about it, but I think it's a serious thing to kind of watch moving forward through July, through these warm months, through August. And I think that if you have to maybe go into a six-man rotation at some point, maybe you have to look into that. The other part to Curry's point was, if you are getting better outings from guys like Giolito, if Buehler figured something out, I don't know. If Bayo can be a little bit more reliable and get deeper into games, maybe that allows Cora to look at a particular outing by Crochet when we're up 6-1 in the sixth inning and get him out of there. I don't know. But we need to see that bullpen get a little bit stronger before you can have any kind of confidence in that. Go ahead, Nick.
There's one more point we got to also remind ourselves of from today. Who was behind the plate? Who was catching? Connor Wong. And I was focusing a little bit on how much shaking off was getting done and good adjustments point. That needed to be made. And that scared me too. I am at good a point with Connor Wong. We need to either DFA him, figure out an option to get him back to Worcester. We need another option as a backup. Because another point, Navarez was in the game again today. Navarez looks like he's gassed right now. But you have to rely upon Navarez because Connor Wong can't do a damn thing. He can't. So that also plays into today's outing as well. Because I'm sure, I don't know the statistics and stuff like that, but Navarez has been the catcher for the majority of the starts for Crochet. And the amount of shaking off and not being on the same page today was an extreme factor on today's outing.
You know, that's a great point that you brought up, Nick. In fact, maybe one of us can research this for tomorrow's article or something. But I'd like to know what Crochet's record is in amount of pitches thrown when he's throwing to Connor Wong as opposed to Navarez. That's a really good point that you brought up. So definitely we got to look into that at some point within the next few hours. I do want to move on a little bit more because we touched on the bullpen. So Hicks got his first save since being traded for Rafael Devers.
Love Red Sox Digest? And stop freeloading and subscribe already. Free subscribers get recaps, rants, and the occasional emotional breakdown. Just like Craig Breslow with the trade deadline. Upgrade to a paid subscription and unlock the full archive. Subscriber-only game breakdowns, behind-the-scenes audio rants, exclusive mailbag Q&As, plus live chat and post-game streams where we scream into the void together. And if you're a true sicko, become a founding member and we'll put you on the podcast. That's right, a guest appearance on Red Sox Digest. Hit subscribe. It's cheaper than Fenway beer and way more satisfying.
It wasn't clean. It gave up a two-out RBI single before getting Abrams to fly out. I think his ERA sits around 6.34, something like that, and his whip is about 151. Meanwhile, you've got Aroldis Chapman, who has a 129 ERA, a whip under 0.8, and has 15 saves for us. Question being, why is Hicks closing? And is this just about roles, matchups, or trying to justify some sort of trade that happened? So my question is Hicks the guy you want on the mound with a one-run lead in October? Or are we just hoping that it's command issues and the radar gun distracting us? And if Chapman's been this dominant, why didn't he close? Is it just matchups or is there something else to read out of this? Nick, I'll start with you.
Today was a matchup and I was chatting in our chat that we have here and I was not happy about it. Because it meant that we'd have to put our faith and trust into a guy that we just got who was pretty much our bargains by the bagful for Raffy Devers, Jordan Hicks. A failed starter who the Red Sox are trying to reinvent the wheel here by putting him in the bullpen and making him adjust and figure it out and putting him in high leverage situations. I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan. I like Hicks as a 6 or 7 guy. That's where he should be. I think today was a matchup thing, and Cora got very lucky because Cora was trying to once again outsmart and outmanage everybody in the ballpark and make a move today because the top of the order, the cream of the crop of those so scary Nationals were in the 8th inning. I don't care. Chapman is my closer. I am so sick and tired of the versatility. Put the guy in. He's been your dominant force in that bullpen. He needs to stay in the 9th, keep him there, and let it be.
Curry, your reaction to the question on the bullpen with Hicks and Chapman.
100% agree with Nick. It was a matchup thing, which is stupid to go into the 9th inning thinking, oh, Chapman, the best closer we got. Let's put him in the 8th. And then Jordan Hicks, who's only pitched like 2 games. He's going to get the save today. I understand the baseball savant or AI or whatever the crap you want to call it, telling you this is what you got to do. But there was 100 plus years of baseball that they made better decisions when I was, before I was even thought of. There's a time you take it and you'd be like, okay, it's telling me to do this. Okay, let's toss it in the trash today. Chapman's going to get the 9th. Let's put Jordan Hicks out there with the leash, with somebody else already getting ready to gear up. If it takes two relievers to get you through the eighth and Chapman shuts down the ninth, do it. But we should not be having to grip our chairs when Jordan Hicks gives up a RBI single and you're like, oh, crap. And then their best hitter, which is not many, is coming up. Like, if he doesn't get that out, this could be a whole different ballgame. And I could be 0-3 going into this podcast.
Look, so, yeah, you know,
when it comes to Chapman.
Look, here's my take on this. You know, and again, it's obviously going to come from a side of being cynical. When I see the Red Sox do what they do today by having Chapman in the eighth and Hicks in the ninth, the first thing I start to think of is trade bait. And they are showcasing Jordan Hicks for the ninth inning to show that they could sell him as a closer. Because everybody knows that Chapman can pitch the ninth. That's not a question. So that's the one thing I think of. The second thing I'm thinking of is, let's see if Hicks can pitch in the ninth, because we plan on trading Chapman, and Hicks will be our closer. So it's all coming from a position of, you know, what are they going to do, and kind of like looking at it from a sarcasm standpoint, because I can't understand why you would have Hicks in his second or third outing of the year for the Red Sox closing games for you. I understand matchups are an important thing, and they're also important when you have a really strong locked and loaded bullpen. When you have Chris Martin and Kenley Jansen back-to-back, you can understand you have strength there. Scott Williamson, Alan Embry, when you've got guys like that in the eighth inning that you can basically have as closer B, from John, as Sean Farrell used to call people, that's fine. But when you're putting him out for his first save situation in an area where this wasn't a case where Chapman wasn't available and you had no other choice but to put Hicks out there, Chapman was available and he should be your ninth inning guy. I don't agree with this decision. I understand it if you want to sell me on matchups. But I just think something's smelly in Denmark, rotten in Denmark. And I think it all has to do with showcasing either one of them or knowing that Chapman's gone and they're going to sell us on Hicks as the closer and Slayton will get the eighth when he comes back. And that's what scares the bejesus out of me. Moving right along, Trevor Story, who is now batting .900 on the season, he launched his 14th home run, a two-run shot in the first. And he now leads this team with 53 RBIs since we lost our DH. He's hitting .252 on the season, has a .695 OPS, if I have it right. But over his last 10 games, he's batting .385 with 12 RBIs and two bombs. He was an absolute nightmare for the opposition in June. Look, the glove's always been there, but the bat's been missing in action for most of the season. So is this a real turnaround or just another June and July mirage? My question to you guys is this the real Trevor Story finally showing up? And if it is, how much does it change the calculus for this lineup? Or are we just watching another hot streak and he's going to fade into oblivion when the, you know, when we start getting into August and September? Nick, I'll start with you.
I have a little note right here. My note is... It's a love story. It's a love note to Trevor Story. You know what it says? It says, thank you. And I just wanted to say thank you because this is what we wanted. When it first started in April, when the numbers were hitting over 300 and it looked like we finally got the Trevor Story back from what we were hoping for when we signed the deal, everybody was like, oh, comeback player of the year. Here he is. And then we went through May and it was atrocious. June started to get a little bit better, and as it got towards the end, we have seen a much more consistent Trevor Story that you can rely upon. The problem here is that it's streaky. This is a streak. I do not feel that this is a sustainable method of Trevor Story dominance. The league will figure him out, and we will go through another couple weeks of another path of strikeouts galore and not being productive with the bat. That's what scares me here on this. Honestly, I know how everybody wants Chapman. Oh, let's trade him. Why his value is so high. You can't be any higher than Trevor Story right now. So why aren't we talking about that right now? because I would love right now to just put Marcelo Meyer at shortstop and be done with this. I would love to do that because I think this team can still win and win fine without Trevor Story. Just how it is. I'm not taking back what Trevor Story is finally doing for this team, and that's producing things that we should be counting on him to do. And let's also put out the fact that this is the Nationals. You're beating up against a horrible baseball team. You should be raking, and he did rake. Today, he did get another home run, but then we saw, you know, what was it, 1-for-5 or 1-for-4 on the day, something like that. I mean, that's cool. I'm fine with that. But it's still, it's almost like up and down. It's like a roller coaster with Trevor Story. But I don't think this is sustainable. That's just my overall take.
Yeah, totally agree with that as far as sustainability. I mean, you know, anybody that's a Red Sox fan has got to be happy with what he's giving us right now. And especially with Bregman out and you just got rid of, you know, Rafael Devers, so you have two impact bats out of your lineup. You really needed Trevor Story to step up at this point. I mean, if we were getting the Trevor Story of May, you know, how many wins do we not have as a result of him being an offensive threat? So it's been very, very good. And the fact that he's a right-handed bat is so very important. And I think it's one of the reasons why we don't see Marcelo Meyer as the shortstop yet. And let's not forget, I, for one, too, I'll take the L. I wanted him off this team in May because it was an absolute train wreck what he was giving you. So while he is beating up on the bad teams like the Nationals, and to your point, Nick, he needs to do that. He's also been doing pretty well against other teams. But let's not change the fact that he still has trouble with the fastball. It's got to be off-speed pitches for him to really rake. And I'm not quite sure he can – I'd have to look at the stats, but I'd like to see what his swing and miss rate is on fastballs 95 and higher because I think it's still pretty high. Curry, what's your reaction on Trevor Story? Do you think he can sustain this for the season, or is this short-lived?
I don't know if y'all are wrestling fans, but I believe in TST. Signed him, I was excited. He's one of my favorite non-wrestlers. He's in hitting that Rockies ballpark, which is just a great hitter's park. But I truly thought he's going to be a great piece for this lineup. Injuries are just not at the beginning of the year. It's just started showing these little flashes. But the little coach streak, this stretch right now is actually better than the start of the season. This stretch, if you know, obviously he's not going to have go 6-12 and 5-13 the last two series, every single series. But he's had 5, 6, 7 game win streaks throughout the last month and a half. And then that ends. But he's always had that big hit here and there. And even before Devers was scored. So he's been in the entire time. The last 2 weeks, week and a half, he has been hot. So I can understand why people think, oh, this is not sustainable, but it has been. It's been, you know, going up. But we had the Devers thing in between this. He gets traded. During the New York series, Story was pretty good in that series, too. We failed to talk about that because Durant, all of them were really good. But he's showing. He's getting better. He's hitting fastball again. He's hitting. He's just killing anything that's off speed. We will see a stretch of like 2-3 games where he might not get it, but then he's going to have 1-2 hits, you know, just keep doing it. I think he's just going to keep doing it 100%. And I think by the end of the year, he will lead this team in RBIs. I think he will lead in home runs as well, unless we get a big bat at the trade deadline. I truly believe in TS10. I think this is for real, and it's going to continue to be for real. And I hope he doesn't take a complete crap on my shoes.
So we had a couple comments from Eric. He says, "Please, God, no, don't trade Chapman." I'm with you, Eric. I don't want to trade Chapman. I don't want to trade Chapman. If you're trying to win, or get at least to the playoffs, for crying out loud, you're not a better team without Chapman, period. So I'm with you, Eric. We should not trade Chapman. Charlie says, you know, I think it's a mirage. I'd trade him immediately while he's hot. I'm not quite sure if he's responding to our talk on Chapman or Story, but
that was,
you know,
the Story. That's when that comment came in.
Okay, good. And, you know, here's the thing. I don't know if, you know, they would want to trade Story just because getting rid of Devers and then moving on from Story, I understand he's still making $25 million a year, but, you know, for the production he's given you for June and over the last 6 weeks, he's been worth that kind of money, to be honest with you. So hard decision there. We'll see how that shakes out. The last talking point I wanted to mention today was the fact that after today's 6-4 loss, the Nationals cleaned house. They fired Dave Martinez and Mike Rizzo. This is not just a shakeup. It's a full-on franchise reset. This was their sixth straight losing season, I believe, since 2019. They're now 37-53 on the season in last place. But let's be honest, this sweep by the Red Sox was the final straw. The Red Sox outscored the Nationals 27-9, exposed the bullpen, and made their offense look like it was stuck in spring training. Now with the front office gone, the Nats could pivot hard at the deadline. Maybe C.J. Abrams is available. He's batting .286 with 12 home runs and a WAR over 3. And James Wood, while he's probably less than likely, I think the Red Sox would be crazy not to ask if they could pry him away. So my question to you guys is, how much credit or blame do the Red Sox deserve for triggering this bloodbath in D.C.? And with the Nationals now in a teardown mode, should Breslow be picking up the phone and asking about Abrams and Wood, or am I just in fantasy land? Pick you first.
I just think that this was the last hurrah for this team on this season. It just so happened that the Red Sox beat them up. I think this was a planned thing. I just think the Nationals are at a place where they weren't going to get any better with Dave Martinez. And they weren't going to do anything with Rizzo. I mean, I think that their best days are behind them from after there. Was it the 2019 World Series when you had your Max Scherzers and you had your Juan Sotos and all that crew? That is gone. Kind of like the 2018 Red Sox. It's all gone. It's at a far, far away distance. So I actually give the Nationals some credit here for doing a move of this caliber. It's probably going to jumpstart their team and face them in a different direction. Kind of taking the play out of the Red Sox hands in a way. I mean, Mike Rizzo's been their GM for God knows how long. It's been a while. It might be 10-plus years, truthfully, with him. I even remember him, believe it or not, back when I think he was a rookie signing Steven Strasburg to his first contract. And I want to say that was 2010, 11. So it's like 15 years. So that's a long time. Dave Martinez, that's a guy that I just think is a better bench coach. He was with the Indians for a while. He was Terry Francona's one of the bench coaches for them, I believe. You know, I think he got lucky in a way as their manager. Just one of those situations. We've seen it in Red Sox land. I mean, John Farrell wins a World Series. You're gone. Terry Francona wins too. See you later. Just how it is. In terms of players from the Nationals, you see, I don't think this moves the needle for me. I just don't think it does anything. It doesn't light me up and say, oh, this team's going to get better. I don't think the Nationals are going to change James Wood. That's their identity right now. I don't think they're going to do that unless they're blown out of the way. And Abrams, to me, is just another guy. I think he's having a good season, but I just don't see it moving the needle for this team. So you could pick up the phone and call, as you should with every single team. See what's out there. See what they want. Totally. I mean, I'm open for business for whatever, but I think I need to be smart with the moves that are made. Nothing lights me up from the Nationals.
Yeah, I totally agree in a lot of what you said. I'm not so much an Abrams fan. Wood does intrigue me a little bit, so we'll see how that goes. I do want to wrap up pretty quickly here, but I just want to touch base because we've got Colorado coming in tomorrow. Just going over the matchups first, we have Richard Fitz. He will go against Austin Gombar tomorrow night at 7:10. Then we have on Tuesday Brian Bayo to face Kyle Freeland. And in the final game of the series, it will be Lucas Giolito against Antonio Senzatala, however you pronounce that. He is 3-12 on the season with a 6.57 ERA. Freeland is 1-9 with a 5.49, and Austin Gombar 0-1 with a 5.49 as well. Starting with you, Curry, what are your takes for the Colorado series? What are your expectations?
Well, the only game that worries me is the Dick Fitz game, just because I still don't know what he's going to do after coming back from his rehabs and stuff. The last game wasn't that great. If we get the Dick Fitz that, you know, we had at the beginning of the year, who couldn't get any runs to help him, and if he starts getting runs to help him, it's going to be great. But that's the only game I'm kind of worried about. I think our bats will kill all the Rockies pitching, but if Fitz can give us 5 innings, giving up 3 runs, I think we have a good shot. Bayo, I think Bayo's going to be fine. And Giolito, Giolito's just killing it right now. So I think that's a – I'm going to say we take 2 out of 3 just to be safe. But I have a feeling we're getting a sweep. I think it's going to be a sweep.
Nick, your final thoughts on the Colorado series?
One word, sweep. Yeah. If you don't even talk to me. If you don't, wave the flag, because there is no business whatsoever with your team that you've assembled to lose one game to the Rockies. You should annihilate this team, especially at your home ballpark after a very long, that wasn't that long actually, after a road trip. You need to take care of business. Do it again. I dare you, Red Sox. Do it again.
Yep, agree with you on that point. I think that, again, if you're going to be a contender and not a pretender, you've got to be able to sweep a team like the Rockies. I'm not a big guy in momentum. I don't believe a lot in momentum in baseball. But if I had to right now say that I believed in it, this is the time, because everybody's got to be feeling pretty good coming into Washington, sweeping them, and then coming home for 3 against the Rockies. You should be salivating as a Red Sox fan, and they need to come through and they need to sweep. You throw 6 on the board right then and there in the win column back to back, and you're really starting to, you know, set the table here for the second half of the season. Absolutely. That's going to wrap it up for today. I'd like to thank. Go ahead, Curry.
I was going to say, and we got the Rays series coming up, which this year we've almost dominated the series with them. So you sweep them, or you sweep the Rockies, and then you take 2 out of 4 against the Rays, you're 4 games above 500 going into the All-Star break. That is, you know, when Bregman and them went down, who thought we were going to be there? Like, honestly.
Yeah, great points. That's going to do it for today. I'm going to wrap this up. I'd like to thank Nick Face and Curry Mitchell for being on with me. We'll see you tomorrow night after the game for our next episode. Have a good night, everybody, and take care.